CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody. Tuesday morning, live, happy, healthy. Hopefully everything's going well. Hopefully you're ready to get into the month of August properly, because it's already that time. And you know what they say, when August hits, then you're pretty much downhill to the rest of the year. That's how they describe it. So, I mean, listen, if you're not ready, tough. It's coming at you, like it or not. All right, good morning. So let me introduce to you this morning, Bulelo Tinta, who's been with us every morning for the last little while, and is doing the Cliff Central Sports Show, which he hosts on YouTube. You need to go and sign up for that if you haven't already. There's lots of exciting stuff happening there, and F1 and rugby, among other things, on the MKT show today. Don't miss that. Then also Lebang Khosana, who joins us this morning for the second time due to popular demand. She's back, another return champion, made it to the show this morning. And Lebang, it's nice to see you again. People loved you last time, so they demanded that you make a return.
Well, I'm happy to be here. I had an absolute blast. So kudos to all the people that want to be back. You guys have good taste. And so do you, Gareth. So
hey,
have fun, man.
I just do what the people demand. That's all. I have no say in any of this. The people demand things, and then I just have to deliver. That's how it works.
Oh, yeah. A hero.
That's what presidents apparently should do as well. So
apparently, but how many of them in the world do? How many of them in the world think they know better than their people? That's the problem. So,
speaking of which, mm-hmm. Shout out Angela Merkel. The greatest reign in recent European history has come to an end. I didn't hear you say anything about physics grad and chemistry PhD Angela Merkel. The reign is over.
Have they finally managed to get her out of government?
Competent people know when to leave.
That's
actually a sign of intelligence. Yeah.
Okay, so she resigned. I'm going to miss all those sexy pantsuits. I mean, she always looked so great in those boxy clothes. She always looked so fantastic, and she was always really good at her job. She was one of those things.
Saucy mama.
You loved her, huh? You were. That's your kind of woman, that. Angela Merkel.
Yeah, chemistry grad, of course. Type.
Yeah, it's his type, yeah.
Chemistry grad. What more needs to be said?
It's like, you know, when Boris Johnson eventually goes, people go, thank God, because the hair was just, it's too much of a distraction. There's no way no one should have hair like that. No one should be that disheveled and disorganized. Did you see that video that was going around of him at some commemoration or some police memorial or something? And he's trying to open an umbrella. I'm sure you've seen it. It's just the most embarrassing video you've ever seen, because you could see him going, oh, I know what to do with an umbrella. And then he tries to open it, and then it goes completely, like, you know how an umbrella goes almost upside down? And then he tries to pull it back from there. And then he passes it to someone, and she doesn't want it because he realizes there's a woman without an umbrella. I mean, you know, it's English gentlemanliness mixed up with English buffoonery, mixed up with probably the world's least coordinated, most messy human being that has ever lived. He's just unbelievable. He's so English. Like, if you had to distill the English into one person, it would be him, not Prince Charles. It's like, it's him. He's about as English as they come.
Have you seen Jeeves and Worcester?
He does look a bit greasy. What's that, Bulelo?
Have you seen Jeeves and Worcester before? It's some of the better British comedy to ever come out. Stephen Fry and what's the doctor guy?
Hugh Laurie.
Hugh Laurie. So it was their first, like, real breakout project after Blackadder. So Jeeves and Worcester, and he reminds me of Hugh Laurie's character in that. Just like, never had to work a day in his life.
No.
Somehow got into Oxford because of his grandfather, who's just like, because he comes from one of those legacy families, and he's never done anything. Like, can't even open an umbrella. Well, what a life. And he made it to president.
Well, he is. He's,
or prime minister.
He is. He's like most Englishmen of that kind of background. They didn't really have to prove themselves, except to their good old mates. And, you know, if we were at school together, then that's enough for me. Boris is terrific. How do you know he's terrific? I know he's terrific because we used to play cricket
together.
It's the bloodline. No. We used to play cricket together,
yeah, pretty
and his father and my father and his father, his grandfather and my great grandfather were all very good chummies. And we all went down to Cowes together and then we'd race at Henley and we'd sometimes go along and watch, you know, Goodwood. Those were all the things we used
to
do.
And the horses.
We absolutely loved a little bit of Ascot. My favorite thing to do. Always did like a little top hat and tails. You know, that's the kind of thing they would do. So, I mean, it's almost the end of a generation because I don't think that there are going to be very many Boris Johnsons after this. But it is funny to watch him. He's just a bumbling, stumbling fool. I mean, very entertaining.
So at the high school he went to, right, in one of the dining halls, there is the most obscene, like life-size poster of him. When I was there, he was kind of starting to head towards Mayor of London. And it is the most ridiculous because he looks, you know, some people like Trump and him, you can't actually make a caricature of them.
Mm-mm.
Because they're so ridiculous.
They're already ridiculous.
Caricature. Real life caricatures.
Yeah. So the picture actually makes him look too regal. Like, but it is a ridiculous picture. But because he's so ridiculous.
Oh my God.
And it's a ridiculous picture. But it's just Boris.
It just sounds like a bunch of ridiculousness occurring in this dining hall right now. Is it still up there? Are people being forced to eat and look at it at the same time?
I don't know.
I left school a long time ago.
I don't know how they keep their food down. Steph says, the Wally with the Brolly. Carl is so on your page, Mbulelo. That Angela Merkel, her efficiency is erection-inducing. I envy that level of proficiency. Yeah.
Well said. Well said, Carl.
Oh, my God. Johnson, Biden, Macron, Morrison, Squirrel, all proof that there is no actual choice in modern democracy, says Corona's boring. Yeah, I'm afraid. And then Tracy describes him as, this is Boris, as the bastard son of Winston Churchill and Hugh Grant.
Oh, not Hugh Grant.
Shame. Poor Hugh Grant. I don't know if he needs to be dragged into that.
Like, he just got thrown in there catching a stray bullet. <Can't Yeah.
laughs> So, Lebang, what's happening with you?
Oh, guys, I'm chilling. I had an incredibly long day yesterday. I was told I've got a two-hour meeting, which turned into a 4 or 5 hour training. And then I got a call from my brow lady.
Very
of
important.
Whom she did. Yes, right? Up there, top five most important people in my life. So my brow lady did microblading on me like a couple of months ago. It's basically like doing a tattoo on your eyebrows because as a busy young woman who's changing the world, I don't have time to wake up every morning and just sit there and physically do my brows every morning. Uh-huh. So I went and did microblading. This was a while ago. So yesterday she hits me up and she's like, hey, you're due for a touch-up. I'm like, fabulous. When's the date? She's like, it's this Wednesday. I'm like, oh, not going to make it for whatever reason. She's like, that's fine. You can change the date, but I'm going to charge you. I'm like,
just to move it?
Me for what?
So she calls you. Right? Hold on a second. She calls you to arrange the touch-up. But she's already...
To remind me.
Yeah, she's already chosen Wednesday without you knowing that Wednesday was the day, right? She didn't check with you, does Wednesday suit you? Then you say, no, Wednesday doesn't suit me, and now it's your fault, and you have to pay for that to be moved.
Exactly. And I haven't spoken to her since I did the initial procedure, which was 3 months ago. So give me like an opportunity to decide what works for me. So I'm kind of caught between a rock and a hard place because I like her. She's great. Mm. But now she's making me pay because I can't come when she's deciding for me to come. And I don't know what to do. If I should ditch her and find someone else or if I should speak to her about how I feel.
No, move on. You got to move on to somebody else because that doesn't sound right.
It's my brows, baby. It's my brows.
Yeah, but I don't think, you know, like you can pull rank if you are like the best in South Africa at that kind of, and there are people who are brilliant at it, right? Like I know this one girl she's got like 10 people who work for her and do this, and she started on her own. It was just her. Yeah. And you know, that's proof that, and those are the real small business entrepreneurs because what they do is they learn the skill themselves. Then they find other people or they tell their friends, hey, listen, do you want a job? Because their friends are like, oh, I've got nothing to do. They can tell who's,
yes,
you know, who's serious about it and who isn't. Then they train them and then they employ them and they run this like syndicate of microblading or whatever it is that they do. Now, the cool thing about those people is that they're first of all passing on a skill that's necessary. Second of all, that they're making good money. Third of all, they can develop a huge reputation for themselves, again, thanks to social media. You know, and if their clients, if they have one or two really important clients, they can make a serious name for themselves.
A killing.
Yeah,
absolutely. Like, if a lot of people want to do microblading, like, just to do, like, the basic one is, like, 1,500. That's, like, entry level. So you can imagine
that's good
the
money.
Real top dollar one. That's really good money if you get, like, more than 3 clients a day. So I don't know what to say to this lady, man. I'm just
how
like,
long,
you know what?
How long are you sitting there for that 1,500?
Literally 2 hours of a bit of pain. You know, she applies the anesthesia or whatever. Mm. And she just, like, starts to do the tattoo vibe. And because I'm used to tattoos and that kind of pain, for me, it's like, chilled vibes. But a lot of her clientele are not me. It's like a lot older women who would generally not be interested in beauty and that kind of thing. So that's her little niche. So I'm starting to wonder if she, like, really is just a bit of a crook and just starting to play with people's emotions. Like, because not to disrespect her clientele, but as I'm saying, a lot of them are, you know, like my mother's age, for example, they don't necessarily know a lot about business 101, etc. So if she says to them, hey, if you can't make it today, you're going to have to pay, you know, for me to whatever, whatever, they'll probably do it. And I'm just like, that's so messy, man. That's so messy. So that's how I'm doing today, Garrett.
Well, if she's the best and she's got this incredibly large clientele and she gets to call the shots, then you've just got to make a plan and do what she wants, right? I mean, what is she going to charge? What's she going to charge you for canceling if she charges $1,500 for the appointment?
I didn't even ask her. I was just so uninterested. I was just like, okay. I literally just said, okay. I don't want to know.
Sure.
I don't. The touch up itself is $800, and I'm just like, in the middle of a panorama. It's the middle of a pandemic, lady. Mm. But I'll see. I'll see how I feel. I'll see.
You know, It's weird how some people are, like, married to their hairdresser or their whoever it is, the person who does their skin treatment or the person who does their, like, manicure or pedicure. And I mean, especially women, they get very attached and they feel terrible if they move on. The fact is,
it's a relationship.
It is a relationship. But the fact is also, like, these people are service providers. And if you find someone who, let's say they're just pure convenience, like, you have no issue with that person at all, they might be terrific. I mean, I've had people who've cut my hair before and I thought, wow, they're amazing. And I get on with them like a house on fire. But then it turns out that it's just quicker and easier to go to the person down the road, right?
Yeah, I guess so. But because, you know, we kind of use that time to connect with these people. They know about our lives. We share stories with them. We don't end up going to that specific salon for our hair. That's just the plus. We're going to offload. It's a therapeutic experiment, whether you want to believe it or not. And that's, I believe, why we go to the same dentist and the same doctor and the same hairdresser. Convenience, I get it. But for many of us, it's more of a, oh, thank God, now I can tell you how shitty my life is. And they'll listen. Why? Because it's a service, as you're saying. It doesn't matter what you're saying. They're just going to say, really? Oh, no. Wow, how could he for 2 hours and you'd be feeling better about yourself and you happen to look better or whatever the case is. But it's the same reason why, Gareth,
it sounds a hell of a lot.
Your listeners left. Yeah?
No. It sounds to me a hell of a lot like a friend. Like this is a person who you a lot of people have to pay for someone to have to listen to their bullshit. And some people really have a boring story to tell and not particularly interesting to listen to. And I think that those people, they need these relationships that you're talking about. And the poor old hairdresser or the person who does the nails or whatever it is, that person, they realize, like, oh, part of this job is I have to talk to that idiot again today for 2 hours, but they'll never say it.
I don't doubt that at all.
It's part of the job, right?
Imagine to sit there, you're doing your job, and every hour the same kind of person is just coming in, and you have to just act interested, because the more interested you act, the higher the chances of a return customer.
Well, listen to this. There are lots of comments here that are coming up. First of all, somebody says here that she should include the touch-up in the original cost. How's this? This is Tracy. She says she needs to be schooled in business ethics. Also, if you school her, she should cock it up. She could cock it up. You're in a real tough spot. Yeah, because that's the other point is, if you piss off your hairdresser or the person who, your dentist or someone, they could, if they were really malicious, they could, like, knock out a tooth by mistake or cut a huge hole in your hair or you know, make your one eyebrow go like this and your other eyebrow go like that. You got to be careful about that.
It's a risk. It's a risk.
That's right.
And the problem is there aren't like 15 in the area you live in. The last thing you want to be doing is driving across town to sit down for 2 hours, you know? So in your area, there's probably two or three. Oh, well, it's a nightmare.
Now, exactly.
It sounds like
I'm not the world's most empathetic or sensitive or compassionate person, but Errol says, Gareth, thank you for your kind words last week for my brother who passed away. He was one of the first to like and subscribe the channel. It's the only reason I gave you my condolences, Errol. He used to listen to us, and people who listen to this show, I will always reserve the larger part of my sympathies for if something goes wrong in their lives. The people who don't listen to the show, I could care less. They could be dropping like flies, and it wouldn't bother me at all. But your brother, if he listened, he liked and subscribed, then we're sad that he's not here anymore. Those are the most important people in the world to me. The rest of them, they could be falling down in the street. The street could be piled high with the rest of them, and I wouldn't care. That's the truth.
He's not even lying.
No.
He's not.
So Kerry says, on behalf of blonde people, you will travel for days when you find a hairdresser that is brilliant with blonde hair. Yeah, well, you know what, Kerry? I mean, as a guy, it really doesn't matter to me. It's not as important. I can understand, though, for a girl, because especially if you are doing things with the color of your hair, you got to find someone who knows what they're doing. Otherwise, you'll look cheap and nasty. So I understand. If you found someone who looks great, who makes you look great, you got to stick with them. Gavin says, check with your cuck, Felicia. I'm sure there's plenty more peeps out there looking for business. Gavin's on your side. So don't feel bad. Gavin's saying to you, Lebang, go for it. Find someone new. I will pay the hairdresser extra, says Hadmi, not to talk to me. Yeah.
I love that. I absolutely... There's nothing worse. I mean, I don't do the hairdresser thing.
I mean, you
must
have
come your hairdresser experience. Yeah,
what do you do, Mbulelo? I mean, that's interesting because do you even have to go or do you just do it yourself?
The process of hairdressing.
The barber comes to my house, cuts my hair, get the hell out of here. I don't want to sit down at a barber where there's people telling annoying stories. So I have like Uber style. Come to my house, cut my hair, and then don't let the door hit you on the way out. But the worst... Listen, the worst part of my entire life probably is the chatty person when I'm shopping, like the cashier who wants to chat. I don't want to talk to you. Like, we're in a service provider situation.
You are horrible.
Like, just process that stuff. I'm standing over here. And then,
you are the how anyone has ever wanted to be with you or sleep with you or talk to you is beyond me, Bulelo, because it sounds like such an effort for you to actually be human.
And be kind. Like, it costs you nothing to be like, hi, cashier lady with, you know, very terrible eyebrows and probably very tired from a long day. How are you today? No, I don't want 10 rands. I want 2 5-rands. It's not going to hurt you to just be kind.
Exactly.
You just want to be like a
misery.
Cold.
No. Hi. Do you have a what card? No, I don't. Thank you. We are done here. You're ringing something up. Thank you very much. I am gone. What are we doing? What am I here to do? Upgrade my friendship circle.
Oh, like, Cole.
And that's not to say...
You know, Lebang is right. Like, sometimes kindness or a little bit of... You know, you just make a small effort with somebody. What is it costing you? Zero. A little bit of your patience or your time. What are you going to do anyway? You're not going anywhere.
But why is it unkind to just say, hi, how are you? Do you have a card? No. Perform your service. Take my bags and leave.
We're not saying that's unkind. We're saying it'll cost you nothing to just be that little bit kind and not get irritated when she wants to be kind to you.
No. Sorry. See, this is where we head with people is like everyone should be allowed to get into my circle. No. Sorry. If I want to talk to you, I'll talk to you. And because I don't ever want to complain about, my mental health and this person came into my life. And
Yeah. But there's a fine
line. I'll stop you there.
Listen, Dogozo says, the cashiers in KZN talk to each other while they're helping you. I'm with Mbulelo on this one.
It's the worst.
This is exactly.
And then they make a mistake.
So yesterday I went and did my, you know, I'm not a complicated grocery guy. I go like maximum once a week. And then what I'll do is, I'll buy those things that last a week. So you know, the, I don't do like a big shopping experience. If I fill half a trolley, it's a lot. Anyway, so then I'll go to the counter like I did yesterday and I'm friendly. I'm like, hi, how are you doing? No, I don't have a card. Yes, I'll need some bags, please. And then I'll smile and, you know, look her in the eye and all that stuff, or a him if it's a him, and, you know, it's, you get on with it. But this woman was busy talking to the woman who was packing the bags. And they were not, I might as well not have existed. But it's fine. It's still fine. Like, what does it cost? It's not, I don't care. I'm not looking for my best friend. I'm just going to be nice. And if it happens to make someone else's day a little bit better that I was nice, then great. Then I've achieved something. Just move on. It's not important enough. Exactly. Get upset. Imagine being one of those people.
And you still got your groceries, right?
Right. And imagine being one of those people.
In the bags.
Exactly. Imagine being one of those people who's upset that the cashier didn't give you enough attention.
Yeah. Oh, that would be a different world.
Yeah.
That's really sad.
Dylan says, can we please talk about the price of a men's haircut? 15 minutes at a max can start at 180 Rand. Now, yeah. Are you saying, Dylan, that that is too much, or are you saying that that is too little? Because what do you get for 180 Rand these days? And a haircut lasts you at least 3 or 4 weeks. Right?
Like, it depends what that haircut comes with. Are you getting a massage? Is it a hot towel that, you know, is going to be on your neck throughout? Is it like, you know, what comes with it? Because 180 sounds like a bit much for a bit of a zip, 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 in my opinion. I mean, like, there was a time where haircuts were like $50.
I don't think that.
But listen, there are bad haircuts. Even like for me, if a guy doesn't line me up, so now I've got my guy, is it's worth paying extra. Like you said, for 3 weeks
get
of
the
not
job
having
done
your,
properly.
Yeah.
But hang on, because again, you know, 180 Rand, there's not a lot you can buy for 180 Rand. I mean, if you are making a meal tonight and it's for you and one other person, you're easily in 180 Rand if you're going to make a, you know, an interesting meal. I mean, there's some cheap versions of that you can do for, you know, 30, 40 Rand, but 180 Rand, and especially if you go out, 180 Rand for you on your own is a lot. So that's one night. A haircut you're going to use for a good couple of weeks. That's going to make your life easier. And you're going to hopefully look a whole lot better too. So I don't think that's too much. 180. What does an average woman's haircut cost? And especially, you know, black women, my God, they have to sit there for hours if they're doing the braids or the weaves or any of that stuff. That can take like a whole day. And that can be a couple of thousand rand, right?
Definitely. I mean, the last time I set foot in a salon, and I've had dreads, like, I've had locks my whole life, basically. Mm. I used to pay an average of, like, $800, and this is when I was still in high school.
Sure.
So it's probably gotten a lot more expensive. And an average weave, a good weave, will cost you maybe, like, $3,000, and that's for, like, entry level. But that's also because, you know, for us as women, beauty and hair care, it's key. It's important.
Yeah.
We want to look and feel beautiful more than most guys. Most guys can just wake up and just shoo, shoo, shoo when they're done. Only now we're seeing that males are taking grooming seriously. So some guys are willing to view, you know, a haircut as an investment and say, ooh, this haircut will last me 3 weeks. I'm willing to part ways with this 180. Whereas I know a lot of guys that are like, 180, there's absolutely no way. And they'll just, you know, pay that guy on the side of the road for $20 and still get away with a good haircut, maybe not the best. There'll be no hot towel and no massage, but still a good haircut nonetheless. So women's hair, it's a huge, huge business. It's crazy. It's been like that for years.
Well, Michael says that is why giving out 350 Rand to South Africans is an insult from the, you know, social welfare. Yeah. Kerry says, come to Cape Town because it's 360 Rand for a four-year-old's haircut at a barber. Four-year-old. Yes, sis.
Sorry, what's my four-year-old doing with that much expensive? What? Sorry, what was that? No.
Now, this is something that Ben, who's often on the show, says, Pakistani haircut for men, only $60. They don't understand English, so it's in and out. That's the way you've got to go, Mbulelo. That sounds like your
Mbulelo,
kind of thing.
There you go.
Yeah,
no, I got my guy now. He's efficient. He doesn't talk. Cuts my hair. Gets the hell out of there. Fantastic. Don't.
Salome says, Bulelo, I recommend online grocery shopping. Changed my life. All the fun, none of the interaction.
Problem is, I'm a bit of a workaholic. I'm never home. So when I need the shopping to be delivered, that, you know what I mean?
But you know you can place a recurring order, eh? You know you can do that.
Yeah. And here's the issue. Twice now I've had items missing. You know what I mean?
See.
And then what do I do? Like now it's another investment of like an hour, another day. So Salome, that's a good suggestion. I've done the opportunity cost through the previous actions of a certain retailer, and now I'm trapped and having to go and walk and hear about a lady's emotions that I don't want to hear about while I try and get my grapes.
Put in your headphones so that it
Okay, you see, now what you're saying now, that's rude. Like if I'm visually showing you with like, okay, I want, if we could just do hi, shopping, bye, that's not rude. If I have my headphones, like, isn't that not an insult? Like, your humanity doesn't matter.
No, not at all. I think it's going to save you having to pretend like you like being there. Because then for sure you're doing something interesting. You must be listening to a really hot song if you're not even going to try. They won't even waste their time trying to interact with you. So I'm helping them because you truly aren't about that life.
Actually, so you were projecting earlier because, you see, I'm not rude. You're the rude one. Headphones in is like just that is like your humanity doesn't matter. You like I'm like, hi. Shopping, look down, carry on. And you're just earphones in. I'm way too good to be here anyway.
God. You know, what if it's the other way around? What if that hairdresser who Mbulelo thinks just wants to talk to him is actually thinking, oh God, here comes this guy who just wants to talk the whole time. And the two of you haven't been honest with each other, and both of you are laboring under the misapprehension that the other one is the one who wants to talk when neither of you do. Maybe the hairdresser's going, oh, I just want to shut up. I don't want to talk to this moron. But, you know, he sits there like a lummox, and then he looks at me, and I'm expected to say something. It's unreal. So,
well, I've always thought of money as portable power. So for me, it is a bit of an ego trip. It's like, I'm paying you for this 15 minutes. Do what the emperor says. And the emperor doesn't want to talk. You know?
What a superiority complex.
I'm so curious about, like, your girlfriends and, like, the people that are very close to in your life. But that conversation we can definitely have another day.
Oxy Head says, I pay my hairdresser with weed. He's happy, I'm happy. Well, okay.
Nice.
Suppose. These days, hey, listen, if you don't have to involve SARS and you don't have to involve any actual exchange in currency, go for it. I say that's the way to do things.
Yeah.
Hadmin says, wow, color cut and dry, easily 3,000 Rand, 3,100 if they don't talk to me.
What?
Yes, sis.
Absolutely.
I like that. 3,000 Rand. Mm-hmm. Who are these people? How often do you do this? Is dry? What is it called? Color cut and dry? Is that like every 3 weeks, every month? How often?
Probably monthly. I would think it's like monthly. And a very important thing that Hermine said there, 3.1 if they don't talk to me.
Yeah.
If you talk to these people and get friendly with them, and the more you open up and they open up back, chances are you can get a discount at any given time just because they like you. They like you so much because you came in and blabbed and blabbed and blabbed. You can get 200 bucks off. And the more you go, like, you guys are building a family of, like, people like-minded that just go in there and gossip all day. It's just what it is. And, yeah, there's some benefits to talking and talking and talking.
So look at what you've done. You told us about your brows, and we've spent like half an hour talking about hairdressers and people in the beauty service provision business and all of that stuff. So look what you've done. We've got JJ Cornish coming on to join us in just a short while. He'll be telling us in our update on Africanalysis what is happening in Tunisia, which is a country that I think we need to pay some attention to. You know, very often we forget that, and in fact, so do the North Africans. They forget that they're part of the rest of Africa, and we forget that they're part of Africa. And they play an important role. They carry quite a lot of weight. They're definitely one of the major kind of subsections of what we think of when we think of Africa. And the North Africans are a very different bunch of people with some very different politics, some very different goings on. They're also dealing with COVID in a different way to the way we are. So we'll speak about Tunisia in a moment or two with JJ Cornish. We check in with him bi-monthly, and that is brought to you by the Johannesburg Business School. So don't miss JJ Cornish coming up in a short while. That's always good fun. And later on, I've got a brand new interview for you. Someone called Chris Wyatt. Now, you've actually got to listen to this because I spoke to Chris Wyatt last week, and he's an American. He's in the U.S. at the moment. He's got some really interesting ideas about what's going on in South African politics. He's controversial as hell, so you're going to agree with some of the things he says. You're going to disagree with some of the things he says. He has been in the U.S. Army. He's a retired colonel. He's served on a number of tours of duty. He knows South Africa very well. He's lived here for a short time. He knows the politics better than many of the outside people that we speak to. And he's got a fairly, you know, interesting and nuanced and objective point of view. We tend to get very touchy and sorry. Oh, wow.
COVID.
Happy Tuesday.
Prayers.
Yeah, there's COVID. That's me.
COVID has got
COVID.
You.
Oh. It's getting worse again. Sorry. Lord.
The countdown clock. Guys. The countdown clock has started. I'm finished now.
Another stat.
Another number on the COVID update. Sorry, it had to be you.
Sorry. Another Fauci figure.
So, before I die, let me finish telling you about Chris Wyatt. So he says things about South Africa that maybe we are too close to say. You know how sometimes it takes someone from the outside to look at you as a country and say, this is what you've got going on. This is what's right. This is what's wrong. I think you'll find it interesting. I spoke to him for about an hour, and that is on today from 8 o'clock, and he'll be up under Gareth's guests on all our podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts, on whichever podcast platform for you to listen to from 8 o'clock this morning. So go along and check that out and tell us what you think. And leave your comments also for this morning. If you want to be on the show live, like so many other people, what you need to do is like and subscribe. And now all these people saying it was very nice to meet you, Gareth. God bless you as you go to your grave with coronavirus. Thank you, everybody. I have one sneeze and people are starting to assume that I'm going to be dead.
That was like a three-in-one sneeze.
Yeah. Do not go gently into the night, Prince. Rage.
The dying light. Yeah. Thank you very much. Where's that from again? Was that Blake?
What's the poem called? Is it? I don't know if it's a Hemingway or whatever.
So, Death Be Not Proud.
Death Be Not Proud.
Death Be Not Proud, yeah.
It's one of these. Yeah.
Look at us.
Anyway.
Look at how literary we are being this morning. Hello.
Hey. I just watch rugby. I'm not just a rugby actor.
Wow. I didn't expect this morning to go in that direction. Okay, let's look at some headlines quickly before we get to JJ and see what's happening in the world around us. It's very important that we pay attention. So the Warring Cape Taxi Associations have shared a newfound plan after weeks of violence. Now, I know people in South Africa are always astonished by the taxi industry. There are a couple of things that should give you pause to consider that the taxi industry is a lot more complex than the taxi driver that you encounter on a weekly or daily basis in Johannesburg. And I say that because these are the only people who gave the middle finger to government's lockdown last year. They said, not us. You can make rules, but you're not going to be able to enforce them with us. They basically said to government, get screwed. And they're the only business sector that did that. They had the balls to do that. You know, people talk about white monopoly capital and about mining and about big business in South Africa and how it's, you know, big retail or big pharma. None of those people stood up to government. The taxi associations did. So in the Western Cape, the Warring Taxi Associations, the Cape Amalgamated Taxi Association, which is called CATA, and the Congress of Democratic Taxi Associations, CODETA, I know, I love this. It's like political associations. They've apologized for holding commuters to ransom for the past few weeks. That's quite a big move. They don't ever apologize, right?
Cowboys. They're cowboys.
Yeah. So anyway, they met with Transport Minister Fikile Mbalula and Transport and Public Works MEC Dalen Mitchell at the Protea Fire and Ice Hotel to announce developments regarding taxi violence. And they said, the past few weeks have been difficult. People have lost confidence in them. They said, we cannot bring back the lives of the people that have been lost. We will work hard on improving ourselves, they said. And Balula said the last few weeks have been horrible. They've been working closely with the Western Cape government to resolve the conflict in the province. He said discussions with the two taxi associations, they had reached agreement and therefore decided to implement measures with immediate effect. And this is very good news. All routes will be monitored and action will be taken against associations and individual operating license holders who are in breach of the instructions. So they're going to get back to work this week. That is very, very good. This is the only time that politicians prove they're useful, and I'm loath to say that about Fikile Mbalula, because I think he's, you know, he's mostly a moron. But let's be fair. Like, this guy, if he got this right as transport minister, that is a big and a progressive and a useful move in the right direction. So Fikile, finally you've done something useful after all this time we've been paying you a salary. But well done. All right. So that's the first thing you need to know this morning. There are a couple other things. Do you want to hear about Medupi Power Plant? Because they say after 14 years, it's finally complete. Do you want to hear about it? Or are you stunned?
I'm curious. I don't know much about power plants, but how long should it generally take for a power plant to be complete? Is it generally 14 years? Or
no.
Is it just that South Africa is...
No.
It can't be 14 years, right?
No, it should not be. It really shouldn't.
Dubai put two up in 6 months.
Yeah.
And that I know because I had a family member involved. Two up in 6 months.
You see, I think it should take less than a year if you know what you're doing. And also, if there aren't people getting their share of the pie who shouldn't be getting their share of the pie, and the costs keep on going up. So Medupi, finally, after 14 years of construction, they've announced that the project has finally been completed. That's Eskom. Parastatal said this was an important step when it came to limiting the wastage of funds and keeping the lights on in the country. So what they've said is that this Medupi should last 50 years and produce reliable power for 50 years. So there we go. They've
sure. They've
checked the safety and legal requirements.
Do we believe... Like, I don't know if I believe anything these people say anymore. Like, I'll be honest.
I'm with you. Like, you said it.
Like, 50 years, sure, we'll see.
No,
But here's the worst part. They're going to get there, you know, shake hands, make sure that the national flag is up.
Yeah,
I know we have delivered on the needs of all of the South Africans. Our constituents have worked for this day. Nelson Mandela, when he first spoke... Governor Mbeki, when he first spoke, this was the South Africa, a light bulb in every bedroom, in every village, in every house, for every grandmother.
That's right.
Literally copy-paste the speech that they said 24 years ago or whenever. So that's all that's happening. They'll cut the red ribbon, whatever the case is. And then like 2-3 weeks later, I don't know if that's going to be the case. And the sad thing is those who are living below the poverty line are going to be hit the most.
As usual.
Well said. And I think on a serious note, my British mates call it the postman syndrome, is you should never thank the postman for delivering the post. Like, I don't want South Africans to be put in a position now where we do the, oh, thank you, Eskom. No, no, no.
No, please.
You're supposed to be doing that, Eskom.
Yeah. That's the whole reason you exist. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's one last story I want to get to before JJ, and this is to do with... the Olympic transgender athlete Laurel Hubbard, who unfortunately didn't have the snatch part of the weightlifting rights. I mean, you could see the snatch is where she really fucked it up. Take a look here quickly. This is the actual footage from the Olympics, and you can see where she missed the ball. Take a look here, everybody. It's very important.
Anybody who knows anything about weightlifting, I'd be wishing Laurel all the success here.
Yeah, lots of success. Go, Laurel. Yay.
This is a must lift.
Laurel. There she is. 125 kilograms, attempt number 3. That was not a fart. That was actually the bell that goes. Here she is. She's ready to lift the weight. And remember, it's a clean snatch and jerk. Out the back door. Oh no, what a pity. So there we go. You couldn't make those headlines up if you tried. But there we go. New Zealand hopeful just she crashes out of this. The snatch was the problem. Who knew? And obviously, transgender activists all over the world, very, very upset about that. But well done to Laurel Hubbard for at least making it this far in the Olympics and possibly ruining it for some girls who've been training their whole life to do this. And then she comes in as a much, much older man and takes their place. But, you know, what the hell? Who said
that?
Let's
be kinder to her. Let's be kinder to her considering, like, the comeback game. If Laurel started her career at, like, the age of 21, left, came back. I mean, how old is Laurel now? 43. That is, like, some real I'm not giving up on my dreams type attitude.
No, Laurel didn't give up on her dreams. She entered as a man years before but didn't even make the cut and then decided to enter as a woman. And guess what? She pushed out some women and she got in ahead of them. And look at her. So who knows? I mean, well done. This is a great victory for female athletics. It's terrific.
Let's also not go down too far the path of like you're a real warrior from nothing. Her father used to be the mayor of Auckland, and the Hubbard Food Group is New Zealand's biggest food group that was just bought up. So we're also not talking about a marginalized citizen here. Please, let's not go down.
And let's not talk about male privilege or about any other kind of privilege at this point. Does anyone know when Laurel lost her hardy? I think that's obviously a reference to the cartoon.
Oh, my Lord.
That's a reference to the cartoon. These kinds of comments are completely tasteless, and I do want to put an end to them right now. We have more important things to talk about this morning. So thank you. And listen, I mean, for all it's worth, here from South Africa, we love our New Zealanders. They're our brothers in arms in rugby. We love to see them succeed, don't we? So, Laurel, great to see you succeed too. Let's turn our attention now to Africa Analysis, which is one of my favorite parts of the week. We get to check in with JJ Cornish, Jean-Jacques Cornish, who is ready to tell us about Tunisia this morning. So, Jean-Jacques, bonjour. How are you?
Bonjour, I'm immensely well. When did you say Lauren made the cut?
More of those horrible, tasteless jokes.
Well, I didn't say it, you did. Want to say at the outset that Mbalelo, I want my Dylan Thomas, I got snot flying with him, T-shirt back, all right? If you don't know that Go Gently Into the Sweet Night was Dylan Thomas... For his daddy.
Thank you.
His daddy was about to buy the farm, and Dylan wrote this beautiful poem. But Dylan Thomas's best line was, he was a man much the worse for drink, came to the door of an aristocratic friend, knocked on it, wishing for more drink, obviously. The man opened the door and said, Dylan, I'm very sorry. I can't let you in. I'm entertaining. And Dylan said, Not very.
That's so
shout
great.
Out to Dylan Scott.
That's amazing. All right. That's probably the best story I've heard in about 3 weeks. That's fantastic, JJ. Thank you. Tell us about Tunisia, because as I mentioned in the introduction a little earlier on, or rather when I was telling people we would be joined by you this morning, Tunisia is a funny place because it's in that group of North African countries who sometimes consider themselves part of the rest of Africa. And sometimes, very conveniently, when it suits them, they're not part of Africa. You know, they speak Arabic in that part of the world, not French and English like the rest of the continent or many other languages. They don't consider themselves part of the Francophone or Anglophone areas of influence. They're also not really like the rest of sub-Saharan Africa in many ways because we're separated from them by this huge big desert. And their politics seem more concerned with the affairs of Europe or the Middle East than they often do with the rest of Africa. Am I wrong?
Absolutely, absolutely, 100% correct. Tunisia, 11.5 million people, tiny little country. It's not, they have in the Arab world, when you look at the north of Africa, the Mashrek, which is what we would call Mpumalanga, where the sun rises.
Right.
And then the Maghreb, where the sun sets. Now, Tunisia's in the middle. It's in a very rough neighborhood in between, sandwiched in between Libya and Algeria, between the Mashrek and the Maghreb. It's a fantastically interesting little country. They are Arabic when they want to be. They are African when they want to be. And they even claim to be, well, Mediterranean, but they say they're probably European. The island of Lampedusa, the migrant-beset island of Lampedusa is close to Tunisia than it is to Italy. From Carthage in the north of it, of Tunisia, you can see Sicily. So you can see Europe from Tunisia. Fantastically interesting little country. Punch above their weight. That is something we have to learn. Yeah. Now, under the old president, the guy who was Ben Ali, who was overthrown in the Arab Spring, he wanted a bridge between Africa north and Africa south. They the most northerly, we the most southerly.
Right.
And he wanted this bridge. And Nelson Mandela made one of his first trips, foreign trips, to Tunisia as president. It was the African Union summit there. And he then said, well, okay, we've got to do this, said Ben Ali, said to his businessmen, well, we're going to have to create business opportunities and make this business link between north and south. The ambassador from Tunisia, a good friend of mine, a very nice man actually, came to me and said, I don't know what to do. The businessmen have come and said, the president has commanded that we do business with South Africa. We've all written to every South African we know, and none of them have come back. Well, the South Africans were more circumspect. You know, no president can tell you who to do business with. The dollar rules, and in this case, the dinars rule.
Right.
And they hadn't come back, and the ambassador felt that he was in trouble, but the poor, sweaty businessmen thought they were in real trouble because they couldn't obey the president's command. Now, Tunisia, its strategic importance is underlined by the Phoenicians, and then the Romans, then the Ottomans, then the Arabs, and then finally the French. They have Carthage, the Roman city, in Tunisia, which is the biggest Roman city in Africa. And the French ruled it from the late 1800s until 1956, when Habib Bourguiba took over, and he actually made the country quite secular. Now, I've been caught in Algeria during Ramadan, and there was Ben Ali making a speech at Ramadan, taking a bottle and drinking from the bottle of water, which of course you shouldn't be doing in the day. But this was the typical of him. The woman not wearing hijab in Tunisia is quite commonplace. And he gave the vote to women. But then sadly, he lost his marbles and he was ousted in what was effectively a palace coup in about 86.
Yeah.
And by Ben Ali, who turned Tunisia into this incredible police state. You know, there was a policeman on a motorbike at every exit to the motorway. And I, you know, I was driving over a visit to Tunisia many times. And I said to my host, but, you know, I mean, how? And a policeman on every bus and a policeman in every train carriage. And I said, well, this is an absolute police state, isn't it? And the guy said with pride, yes, it is. They thought it was fantastic.
But hang
on. Comparing it to what was happening in Libya and Algeria, well, maybe not a bad thing, huh?
Now, you say that the guy lost his marbles. What actually happened there? I mean, that's too good a story to just gloss over like that. Before Ben Ali, he lost his mind. What happened?
Well, I would think it's a little bit of age and other things creeping in. None of you young buggers at the other end of this microphone would understand what I'm talking about, but it's going to happen to you too. Remember, you very kindly don't remember when I had the death toll in hundreds of millions and blamed it on Donald Trump. Thank you for that. No, but you know, I think it was a little bit of dementia and so on. So he's still considered very highly, and there's Habib Bourguiba Avenue, one of the main avenues in Tunis, the capital. So then comes Arab Spring. And they obviously enjoy old people because, Tunisia winning the Nobel Peace Prize, the way they had democratized. And their president, Beji Caid Essebsi, he died in July 19. He was over – in July 29, he was over 90 years old. So he, too, was, you know, away with the fairies to some extent, as the Irish like to say. And then I observed that election where the new president, Kais Saied, again, not a threat to Michael Jackson or any of the other young entertainers. He's a former judge, and he's also a former law professor. And he speaks in this classical Arabic. So he's a distant figure in a way, but he hasn't got the majority party in parliament, Ennahda, which is, they like to refer themselves as moderate Islamist party, they're in charge. And he's had to put in a prime minister from the previous outgoing government. Well, they've done badly on COVID. They've had nearly 500,000 cases, and they've got more than 20,000 deaths. And last week, Kais Saied sacked the prime minister and the defense minister and froze parliament. Well, I mean, that's caused a huge constitutional crisis. A lot of the people standing for him and went to the streets for him, a lot of people went against. And they've had Arabic or North African members or leaders meeting to talk about what to do in this country. Because, interestingly, it's a small country. It depends on agriculture, which is very good. They will tell you, the Tunisians, that they determined the proper distance for olive trees to be planted apart, and the rest of the world followed.
That's very handy.
Something my guy told me as he pointed to these enormous olive groves, and then tourism is massive, massive, massive. And of course, they had these tourist attacks in 2015 that killed something like, 60 people, mostly foreigners.
Wow.
And that absolutely wrecked their tourism industry, on which they depend hugely. Now, Tunisia is wealthier than Libya, wealthier than oil-rich Libya, wealthier than, in terms of GDP per capita, and wealthier than Algeria. And so that's a very big concern. And right now, when I went there for the last time in 2019, I went twice for elections, parliamentary and then presidential and then parliamentary. You go into the shops and, I mean, they've got sales and they're trying desperately to get the economy going again, but they're battling enormously. But there we have this country at the moment in the state of crisis, with the rest of the North African Arab world looking on. And this very distant, very academic, classical president saying, what? When, you know, he's frozen his parliament. So you know, once again, the democracy of Tunisia is under threat.
You know, JJ, I mean, I think of what you're talking about here with Tunisia, and I think about Rwanda or Paul Kagame. And I think that sometimes we have these incredibly effective and efficient and quite autocratic rulers. And then we have these really badly run democracies. And I can understand why some people go, maybe autocracy is a better option for us in some countries. Because, you know, if you're the kind of person who, like your tour guide, was proud of the fact that he lives in a police state, we tend to apply our rules to all these countries. And, you know, maybe some of the people in them would rather have an autocrat. And some of these autocrats maybe do a better job. And I mean, it's horrible to say, it's, you know, it's sacrilege to Western liberal democracy to say these things. But maybe for the people of Tunisia or for the people of Rwanda sometimes, these are the better options.
Or for the people of Japan or for the people of South Korea.
Right.
South Korea, at the end of the war, trailed way behind Kenya as you know, in terms of GDP per capita and so on.
Right.
Of course, it overtook it and is one of the richest countries. In both those countries, which I visited and had people speak, saying, you know, after the war, nobody questioned. There was no democracy in Japan, but it grew. At, you know, the people, you'd stand on the railway platform waiting to get home. People would fall over from hunger. But they were growing all the time and working. And the emperor said, education is the answer. I will never refuse a request for an interview with a teacher. Things like that. Hmm. South Korea, the South Korean said it, you know, in the most diplomatic way he could. But if they had not had a very autocratic government for a long, long time, they would never have grown. He said, perhaps, as you just said, perhaps it would be a good thing for some African countries. We were musing. He said, of course, now it is too late. He also mentioned that perhaps if Russia had changed instead of going sort of from a communist system into a devil take the hindmost after that, Russia would have done a lot better. So the fact that at some point you might need an autocracy, but I do think that boat has sailed for us and for other most other African countries.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't want to have a Rwandan system. In fact, Gareth, the truth is the only admirers of Rwanda that I've seen in my country, in South Africa, have been Mlungus who've gone there and said, isn't that place clean? Isn't that place orderly? You know, if there's no litter, that's okay. The fact that the president actually comes to South Africa and kills his opponents or sends his people to do that doesn't seem to matter. There's no litter in the streets.
I mean, listen.
And you can walk around after 9 o'clock at night. Cool.
South Africa has
exactly, JJ, as long as Cheryl can go for a walk. That's all she wants. No litter where I walk. You know, I just got these new shoes. My bubby just sent me the money. He's the best son. He's a dentist.
Well, with your vast salary and expenses, you can probably afford private security. So you're okay too.
No. Well, let's not forget that we've had much stranger bedfellows than Paul Kagame. We had old Omar al-Bashir here for a while. Remember, we couldn't even get him arrested.
And do you remember those dudes during the apartheid days? Some of those very bad.
Very dodgy.
Very bad. South Americans who used to come over.
And I mean, aren't we still on reasonably good terms with Teodoro Obiang Nguema? And his son owned some property in Cape Town, didn't he?
I think so. Yeah. No, they've all got money here. I don't know on good terms with him. Teodoro Obiang Nguema, he's now being sought by the French.
Oh.
You know, when the French finally get you as an African for corruption, you haven't had your hands in the cookie jar. You've been bathing in the cookie jar for a decade or so. They've come and taken it. They've got charged him, and Teodoro Obiang Nguema said, okay, that's cool, and he's closing his embassy in France. Well, that'll teach them.
Well, JJ, it's always fascinating to hear from you, and thank you very much for a little bit of a bird's eye view of Tunisia. It's always interesting. What country do you want to focus on next? Because we like these. I mean, these are almost like mini power-packed lectures we get on various African countries, and we haven't missed a beat with interest and illumination so far. What would you like to focus on next? Which country are we going to go and visit next?
Well, you name a country, and I'll do it. Sure. How about that?
Lebang, you want to go for one? I mean, what are you really interested in?
I'd really like to know more about, like, Nigeria and, like, the truth about what happened there. Like, really down to the gritty. I mean, there's the political analysis and all that stuff, but, like, the root stuff that goes down there. I think
hop
on a plane and go there.
I would be delighted, but my word, one injunction, it will be in a month's time, and I would urge you, Gareth, and you, Mbalela, to wear your cricket protectors, because some of the punches will be coming in a bit lower than usual.
All right. Thank you very much, JJ Cornish. Good to see you. There
All the best.
JJ Cornish is brought to you on cliffcentral.com by none other than the Joburg Business School. And you can find out more about them by going to cliffcentral.com, and you will see all the links are on a special page that we've created for Africanalysis. You can also catch up on all the other little snapshots we've done of various other countries on the continent. It's part of what we think is necessary, because this is our home base. This is our continent. And most people know only a little bit about maybe Zim, maybe Mozambique, maybe Botswana, maybe Namibia, maybe Lesotho and Swaziland, and that's about it. And you ask them about anything else, the average South African goes, They go, Africa, you know, which is not unlike the Americans, who think Africa is one country. So there we are. Always good to hear from JJ, and always good to talk about the things that are going on in current affairs in Africa too. So Tunisia, now hopefully you're able to have a conversation about that with just about anyone. The experts on one hand, and the complete novices on another. When we come back, we will continue to be joined by Mbulelo, and we'll continue to be joined by Lebang, and you, most importantly. So stick around for that and a whole lot more. And because it is a Tuesday, we're also going to be doing something interesting. You're going to speak to the CEO of BMW South Africa and the Sub-Saharan African region, also the first South African CEO in the group's history, on this continent, and we're going to talk to him about all the interesting things that are going on with BMW, and we're going to be doing some stuff with them in the next while, which I think you're going to find very interesting. That is a brand that has got unbelievable clout in Africa and South Africa, not to mention the world, and I think it's a great opportunity for us to get to know a little bit about the business from inside by talking to the guy right at the top. So that's coming up all the way on the other side of 7. CliffCentral.com. Stick around for a whole lot more. Don't go anywhere. CliffCentral.com.